We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Light Years. Andy, I was in a really good mood thinking we were going to get the 5-2 homestand. And then that fourth quarter hit. You know, I was getting a little ahead of myself thinking 7-4, second best record in the West. You know, just all sorts of like angels in the outfield type of organization. Wow. And then, you know, reality came down. That was a disgusting fourth quarter.
Yeah, the worst fourth. Although it's not like the Raptors' fourth quarter was good by any means. But yeah, that was the worst quarter that the Warriors have played. Well, no, that's also not the worst quarter the Warriors have played because we watched the first two games of the season. But in terms of disappointment,
in the homestand,
Sam, yeah, that was bad. In terms of disappointment, that was bad because, like you said, they were on track there to win this game. It did feel a lot like the Raptors game where they started off okay. Then it kind of ramped it up a little bit, played a little bit better throughout. And then you kind of saw stuff fall off the wagons.
Yeah, actually, the Raptors game's a great analogy because you could say they snuck away with that one. Well, karma hit them this game. So, you know, coming out 1-1 from those two games is probably fair considering how they played. Like, if they'd have gone 2-0 against those two games, that would have been some ski mask Hall of Fame.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the stuff where it's like expectations. What are the expectations if you're going to play this way across both games? And I think 1-1 is fair. I think from a high level view, it's you look at the homestand 4-3. Before this homestand started, we literally spent about 20 minutes on the last piece of the podcast and said, hey, what would be a great homestand for this team, right? And there's two ways you can look at it. One's the result. I think both of us were looking at 3 wins would be okay, 4 would be nice, 5 would be special, would be great. And then
3 was the line, 4 was happiness, 5 was getting greedy.
And they stole a couple games, right? Like that Clippers game, they were down by 20. I actually didn't get to watch that live. I had to rewatch that thing. And man, they stole that thing. Part of that is that's who the Clippers are. But part of that is also this team kind of played out of their mind. You know, and then they started missing a couple of shots again. This is kind of what happens. But I think the process is okay. I think Steve Kerr – actually, where should we start? I'm going to start here. I'm going to start with Steph Curry. To me, Sam, most of the blame on this game falls on him. Last game, he just missed a bunch of open shots. And, you know, I guess that just happens. This game – this isn't Davidson. These aren't high school, college players. You can't just there were just too many times where he would give up an open three or a semi-open three and then either drive to the mid-range and not shoot or drive to the mid-range and shoot a contested floater or mid-range shot. I'd almost rather him shoot that mid-range shot. To me, that's just that's not acceptable. You can't do that.
All right, let me bring this back a little bit. So I do feel like our frustrations, it's two games, the Raptor game and the Pacer game. It's worth noting the Pacers head coach was Nick Nurse's lead assistant coach. What's his name? Nate Bjornson.
Yeah.
Both games they ran gimmicky defenses on Steph. A lot of box and one. Geez, I really do feel like I'm watching college basketball sometimes these days, watching them play, right? And on some level, I do think Steph made the right play. I do think he passed out of it, but it also comes back to your point. Is the right play always the right play? Is Steph passing the ball to Kelly Oubre the right play? Well, you know, like, I mean, that's what we're getting to here. So it's like, I look at it from a process standpoint. Like, he's not seen these type of defenses regularly because normally he plays with better talent. And now it's kind of down to when are they going to adapt? Because this isn't going to work. Like, Steph being a decoy, like, yeah, it can happen game to game, but like long term, he needs to average close to 30 points. He needs to be one of the leading scorers in the league. He can't just be a guy who gets 20, but if you watch the game, you understood, you know?
I like that. You understand if you eye test. I think it's also the mentality that you go into the game with and how quickly you can change that, if you can even change that. Because with Steph right now, he's coming in some of these games and saying, I'm going to go ahead and just pass the ball and get guys involved. I'm okay with that. I'm with you. Get Kelly Oubre involved. Get Andrew Wiggins involved. Get Draymond the 4-on-3 so he can lob to Wiseman, because I think that's what Draymond lives for at this point in his career. It's
a nice play.
Is nice. But how can you pivot that to being aggressive shooting the ball when it's necessary? Like, that balance is hard. It's also, I think, fair to say Steph has to find that balance faster, because right now I see a lot of he's spending the first quarter playing this way, and then when the third quarter and tonight's fourth quarter comes around, it's like, hey man, shoot the damn ball. he shoots that behind the back, you know, the double behind the back or the step back behind the back against Holiday, right? Makes that three, which is hilarious because he makes that one, misses the open ones, but then he goes back into a shell and starts forcing, you know, kind of mid-range shots again instead of just shooting the three.
You know, one thing I'm seeing is, so he was getting trapped at the at half court a lot of the game. And he's doing the thing where he passes to Draymond and cuts to the corner.
Yeah.
And hoping for the relocation. And like, okay, so the Oubre not knowing where to be is simultaneously hilarious and infuriating. But there's also, they're playing with the expectation that these guys are going to be able to find him relocating. With like the, you know, like ping, 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 pinpoint passing. And I'm just wondering when an adjustment comes there, because, one, Draymond can do that. But like, while Wiggins is a solid passer and Looney is a solid passer, neither of them are like Iguodala or Kevin Durant or like these guys with just exceptionally higher IQs. And then he also is not playing with Clay or KD.
Not playing with shooters, right.
Guys who are going to, you know, there's no amount of movement Steph can do that's going to get a defender to leave Clay Thompson. And you know what? If they're dumb enough to leave Clay, he'll hit the shot, right? Like right now he's playing with guys, they're daring anyone else to make the shot. So I'm wondering what kind of tweaks they can do, because this whole like Steph gives a ball up and hopes to get relocated thing, it works with better talent, but this is a largely mediocre bunch, right?
Yeah, and you can't even, I mean, I wouldn't even say Wiggins is a good passer. I mean, he's a good passer if he's taking it to the hole and making a decision. Like, I would say, like, looking for Steph-wise, the only people that can do that
are Draymond and Looney. I feel like he's a good passer. I feel like he's a good passer because I watch him next to Oubre, so.
Yeah, I think me and you are probably better passers than Kelly Oubre. At least we may pass, although that's probably all we can do. But it's like,
Pass the screen.
like, come on, Looney. it is actually, and Draymond. he's not playing with the right people around him. We can start there. Kelly Oubre, James Wiseman.
To maximize the way they want to play, yes.
Yep. James Wiseman and Kelly Oubre. Kelly Oubre made a couple threes tonight, which is great to see. James Wiseman is struggling. He is. Is it possible to hit a rookie wall in 10 games? Because he is smashed against the wall right now, and it's ugly out there for the kid. I feel bad for him. He's 19 years old, and you know, one of the best parts right now is Draymond Green hot mic, and Draymond Green was yelling at him. I guess not yelling at him. It is Draymond, but he fouls Sabonis, right? And Draymond at the free throw line is telling him, hey, like, just get in front because he's not going to power over you if you can get there. And I thought that's funny because he's basically yelling at him. And James Wiseman is standing there looking timid as hell. And he's trying to process like 18 different things defensively and then 20 more things offensively. And he looks confused.
Can I go on a Wiseman rant real quick? And this is at Warrior Fans Online a little bit. Chill out on James Wiseman. He's well ahead of schedule, in my opinion. Yes, he makes mistakes like every other possession. He's also 19 years old. Like, you can't grade him on the curve of he's not ready to anchor a championship team. You have to grade him on the curve of who he is as a player at this point. And for me, I'm seeing only positive things. You and I have had this discussion. Previous to the season, that number two pick was worthless. This week, I've gotten texts from like five different people who are non-Warriors people asking, like, would you trade Wiseman for Bradley Beal? Would you trade Wiseman for Siakam? Stuff like that. Like, he's a big time talent. It's going to take him a little time. There needs to be a little more patience. Like, it's not his fault that the Warriors assembled a roster that requires him to be like the third best player for them to compete. You know, that's all I want to say. Like, he's a work in progress. And actually, I do have one complaint about his game, which is, why is he no longer shooting three-pointers? But like, with all that said, like, he's very talented and he's going to be a work in progress for a while. And that does mean some bad games. But chill out a little bit, guys.
One of your calmer rants that I've heard. I enjoy it. I think it's right, because I think we talk about this quite a bit too. I love the passion, though, that Warriors fans have. And I think it's very interesting when I talk to the larger contingent of people that aren't on Twitter that watch the games, and they usually say, man, Wiseman is fun to see. He's making some mistakes, but, you know, he's 19. That's okay. You live with it, right? And then you go on Twitter and you see like 50 people that are just – actually probably even less – that are just furious. And I think the passion is great. The issue is, my God, the Indiana Pacers are not a shitty team. The Indiana Pacers have two guys that are like – anyway, they're not elite big men. Maybe Sabonis is playing at an elite level, man. But these guys can ball. Miles Turner and Sabonis, like, they can play
Sabonis
basketball.
Sabonis is a player.
But like, it's hard for the guy out there. Like, it's not like he's not playing Jokic in 80, which he will. But these guys are
those
right
are literally
there.
Then like two of the next three games.
That's no, I know, and those are also the two best big men in the game.
They are, yeah.
So it's going to be throwing
Embiid, and yeah, there you go.
I'm with you
tonight.
Yeah, that's right. I forget who's playing at an MVP level. So I'm with you. I don't know how much more I have to add outside of, I think, Sam, that most people are probably relatively patient on Wiseman. It's just, you know, people tend to get really angry, and I think that's just kind of the in the game stuff. And what do you expect? What I did not like is he seems to me that he's got a little bit of the Andrew Wiggins, like Minnesota Andrew Wiggins lack of motor out there. That was kind of the complaint about him coming into the draft. And I think I've seen it the last couple games.
He does shy away from physicality.
Yeah. Like, I want to watch
not,
more.
It's not, you know how like you watch Draymond and like, you're not always impressed with his shooting skill or something like that, right? But like, you're never like really worried about his like instinct to bang or anything like that. Like, Wiseman's a little different in that way. Like, I do wonder how much he likes to play through contact.
Yeah, that's it. Like, we'll see. I mean, Wiggins now is like going into contact. He actually turned the ball over a few times because he was looking for contact and trying to draw a foul.
Russell Wingsbrook?
Like, yeah. But it's like, I like to see that. We like to see that because it means he's aggressive. So I don't know. We'll see. Again, we'll see. I give him the rest of the goddamn season. I don't know. What do you want to do? You want to play Looney until his hip falls off? You know, you want to play Draymond Green until
again.
You know, you want to play Draymond Green until he turns an ankle and is out for 3 games. Like, I don't know what you're supposed to do here. And then maybe you can blame it on the front office for not getting enough bigs. But then Marquise Chris broke his leg, and Aaron Baines and Marc Gasol didn't want to come because Clay got hurt. So it's, you know, it's a lot of, like you just said, Sam, it's, he kind of needs to be the third, fourth best player right now. And if he was, I mean, then he'd be Anthony Davis.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I'm not even trying to go on a rant on fans or anything. I'm just trying to be like realistic with what he is and what the standards are right now. So let's take this back a little bit. The Warriors are 6-5. I think preseason, if I told you they'd be 6-5 through the first 11, when you looked at the roster on paper and you looked at the schedule, you'd probably say that's okay, right?
I sneakily thought they'd be maybe like 3-4 wins. Remember we were talking about
they were
a little pessimistic. Like, I thought they might be 5-12 or something like that. So, yep.
They're starting to find an identity here. I think that's positive. And, you know, we didn't even mention this. They played without Eric Paschal tonight, who used his last close personal friend card. No, just kidding. Steve Kerr said he thinks he'll play soon. So, which means I don't think he has COVID. I think he's just a contact tracing.
Okay.
Hold, but you know, you never know. So let's take this a little bigger picture here before we get to our segment with Trista Crick of This League podcast to discuss Steph Slander. They went 4-3 through the homestand. They are firmly entrenched in the middle of the West playoffs. As we're looking right now at the standings, what my main take is, I don't know that anyone's going to run away. I stand with my preseason prediction, which is this is going to be one of those years where like the bad teams have better records and the good teams have worse records and everyone's kind of around 500. So I think the Warriors are in fine position right now. I feel like they're exiting their homestand. You know, you want to get greedy. You would have liked them to be 7-4 and get away with the Indiana game and all that stuff. But like, end of the day, they're in pretty good position.
Yeah, this homestand told me that this defense can be legitimate. And I think a lot of it is energy, because I'm watching Andrew Wiggins 6 blocks tonight. Like, he's better than KD on but 6 blocks tonight, fantastic. A lot of it too, just being long, right? Just being long and staying in front of the guy and getting a block against a smaller guard because he's so damn quick. Some of that was chased down. Kelly Oubre, he's always around the ball. Kent Bazemore. One of the big takeaways that I thought of, Sam, was that I wish a crowd was watching this defense, because I think more than anything in the last, after the first KD season, was that they really play to a crowd. And this team really wants to play to a crowd. The great teams were great, but it didn't matter. Like, they could play in front of nobody, drop 120. They can play in front of everyone and drop 80 points. Like, they didn't give a shit. They were too good. This team, though, feels like they would be even better in front of a home crowd, because it feels like, to me, they play in front of that energy. I saw a Reddit post, Sam, about Kelly Oubre needing to play in front of some woman to play better. And
he's a bullfighter.
This team is an energy team. It's a great energy atmosphere team. And I saw some of that tonight in the game. And I wish that there was a crowd here. Hopefully, you know, maybe in the middle of the season or next year. But I think that this homestand did tell me, though, that, Sam, that they could be a top 10 defense. I had them in the top 5. But it certainly tells me they should be in the top 10.
They definitely can defend. And when you can sit, by the way, we should talk about this. They're not really getting great center play. Like, obviously Wiseman's a work in progress in terms of defense, like all rookies are. But is it too early to say Draymond, I might be right, Draymond is the defensive player of the year? Because I think he single-handedly won the Toronto game. And I think his value is really showing. Like, Wiggins is a solid defender who is playing better because he plays with Draymond. He mentioned it in the last post game, which we didn't get to discuss on the podcast. He says, the guys behind me, you know, I trust them. They have my back. To me, that was all about Draymond on defense, where he's, I don't want to take it as a veiled shot at Karl-Anthony Towns, but it's like, it's a lot easier to defend as a wing defender if you know the guy behind you will do his job correctly. You know, like, you don't have to worry about over helping because the guy behind you is a sieve, whatever it may be. And it's really bringing out the best of Wiggins. What do you have, 5-6 blocks tonight? What was that?
Yeah.
And in general, I do feel like Wiggins has been really impactful on defense. You know, his jump shot's going to come and go as it does. I don't think you or anyone is thinking he's going to turn to Kevin Durant as a shooter. But what I really like seeing with him is, like, the defensive intensity is there every night. And I do feel like that's, like, I mean, that's Draymond's value right there. He's taking a guy with tools who's maybe been inconsistent his whole career and turning him into a guy that, like, now everyone's like, I always knew he could be a good defender.
Is there a better encapsulation of Draymond Green tonight than absolutely locking Sabonis down? Like, to me, it's like, Sabonis has no fucking chance against Draymond Green if you're going to go ones, right? If you get Draymond to actually guard a few more, three people at once, yeah, you got a shot. Maybe Holiday will make a three. And then he comes back down at the other end and misses an absolutely wide open dunk. I mean, that is Draymond Green right now in his career. A superb defensive player. I'm with you, defensive player of the year, because just off, if you go off narrative, right? You go off narrative and look at who the Warriors were before he played, you look at the Warriors now. Like, it's ridiculous. But on offense, just absolutely useless right now. He's fine. He's directing people to the right places. It organizes them. I think a few too many times today, he's trying to get James Wiseman that lob when he has a wide open dunk or a wide open layup, because he probably shouldn't be dunking. So Draymond is fun to watch. He's fantastic. The offense leaves a little bit. It's you see the limitations, and we'll see if he can maybe take it to the hole and actually try laying it up in the next few games. But defensive player there, is there even anyone else? Anthony Davis has not really played that hard this season.
Rudy, I mean, Gobert's kind of. It's also like a dozen games in. So, like, I don't want to get too much into it, but
Giannis,
like,
they're not giving it to Giannis.
It goes without saying that Draymond, at minimum, this is what should matter to Warrior fans. Draymond's in shape. He's got his wind. He's finally back to where he should be. And is he any worse of a defender than prime Draymond? Because I feel like he's proving to me that, like, he just needed to get healthy because he looks as good as he's ever looked on defense. Like, the offense is, you know, that's a 3-hour podcast we can do later this week. But defensively, he looks as good as he's ever looked to me.
Yeah, I agree.
And he's doing it with guys who are, I mean, he's doing it with guys who are not Andre Iguodala, Klay Thompson, Andrew Bogut, Kevin Durant, all these guys. So, all that's positive. Anyway, before we get to our interview, I want final thoughts from you on this homestand before, you know, they're going to play Denver, Phoenix, and the Lakers three games in 5 nights, I think. So we'll pod after Thursday's Denver game. They play Phoenix on Friday, and then they have the Lakers on MLK Day.
Yeah, I think this is a tough one. So they're 6-5 right now. You don't want them to come out 6-8. It could be possible because these three teams are better than them today. I guess the most excited game I'm watching for is probably the Phoenix Suns. I think we know who we've gotten out of the Nuggets. I think it'll be a shootout. I think the Lakers might be a bit of a beatdown. I think the Phoenix Suns will be interesting just because you got the number one team in pace versus the last team in pace. And it'll be fascinating to see what type of dirty shit that Chris Paul pulls and the absolute dirtiest and what type of game it'll actually be. They run very slow half court sets. They're actually not that fun to watch, me personally. But they're extremely effective just because they've got the right players around, guys. I don't enjoy
it's a very them. Chris Paul team.
It's Pete Chris Paul. And guess what? It freaking wins you games and it's going to win them a playoff series, maybe two. So that's probably the game I want to see most. And the one I'm not looking forward to is the Lakers, because I mean, just can you imagine Anthony Davis and LeBron getting rebounds against James Wiseman? Like, just
it's not a good sign. They're thin inside right now. It's going to be rough. But actually, before we get out of here, I want to talk about this. So we're recording this while post game's going on.
Oh God, are we? Sorry, I thought we were going to talk about Fitz.
No. Steve Kerr's put out a couple quotes here, which I think we need to respond to. He says, people are going to throw everything at Steph. That's a big theme this season. We've got to do a better job of attacking what people are throwing at us. We'll get better at it. I don't think he's fatigued. He's seeing different pictures. Teams are either jumping out and soft blitzing him or playing a box and one. A lot of secondary actions we would have got a few years ago. We're not quite ready to see. That's got to come.
Okay, so I think he's right, because he understands that. I cannot believe I'm doing this. I can't believe it. Is that they're going to see a lot more of this, and they just can't have Steph run. They just can't have Steph shoot 32 times a game and just force his way through triple teams and box and ones. They weren't even playing full box and one the whole time. A lot of times it was just like it was a zone, and then just it was just different looks that Steph, and probably this is part of why Steph wasn't aggressive, but they can't just have him shoot 30 plus times a game. And also, I don't think Sam and I are asking him to shoot 30 plus times a game. It's just you got to look for your shot a little bit more. And Steph is always going to err on the side of get Kelly Oubre involved versus let me get my 8 shots in the first 5 minutes kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be kind of a big theme to watch for going forward. So I guess that's where we're going to end with this before we get to...
Wait, hold on. Nope. I just realized Fitz, Sam. It's just, this is so bad. And I can't hear you talk about it, but are you serious? Like, the game that James Wiseman played tonight, I don't know if it was awful, but it was good. And he's just out there shilling, absolutely shilling, talking about how he has so many fouls. They can't play if he has
season. You gotta get season ticket renewals, man.
It is unreal. The game itself was pretty damn good up until the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. And you've got Fitz out here complaining about how the Pacers shooters have been shooting 25 or 27 or 29% this season. So these shots shouldn't be going in when these guys are decent shooters and it's been a small sample size. So he's just running back his old like BS shilling quotes while games are it's like a demented version of what we see from Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, where those guys are complaining about some bull crap.
It's also like, I mean, I want to bring this up. Once you've seen the Warriors be great, and once you know what they're capable of, running the Cohan era media BS, it's just small, man. They're better than that. They can do better than that. Like, Fitz is capable of better. Okay, obviously this isn't the peak Durant era, like dynasty, like unbeatable juggernaut where you can be like an arrogant dick. But like, be somewhere better than acting like it's the OOs and you're acting like it's a conspiracy theory that Monte is not getting free throws.
Yep, I think that's a great way to put it. Just stop acting like you're in OKC. Jeez.
Yeah, there we go. That's the best way to put it. Stop acting like an OKC. Maybe we'll name the pod that. All right, add a read, and then we'll be back on the second half.
Hey, everyone. I wanted to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Community Discord and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of all that, we'll get you your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. That is bwhustle.com/join.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you're coming up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to roman.com/lightyears now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/lightyears and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to getroman.com/lightyears and get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Getroman.com/lightyears. Get started now to save $15 off your first month of treatment.
And next up, we have the host of the This League podcast, Trista Crick. Trista, so I was listening to your podcast that you released on Monday. Yep. And you had a segment on Steph slander, and Andy and I, you know, this year, I don't think the Warriors are contending for much in terms of playing for a championship with the Clay injury and what is a mediocre roster outside of Steph and Draymond Green. So it's kind of the Steph Curry redemption tour, if you will. Absolutely. So I'm making time for every person who has pondered how good he really is. And we're starting with you. So this, we're gonna let the audience be the judge and jury and decide if they're going to show some sort of forgiveness or if you're officially on the negative list of Steph stands.
So what do you want to know first? Why I pondered that to begin with?
Is LeBron James the greatest basketball player of all time, Trista?
No.
Okay. We're good there. Who is the greatest basketball player of all time?
It's Michael Jordan. It's not close. I'm not in my mid-20s. Come on now. Only memory of Jordan is the rim check for the Wizards. Like, that's why people don't think Jordan's the best.
Well, I ask that because it's the LeBron fans that don't like Steph as much.
You know what's funny to me, actually, is the more and more you dig into this, there is a high correlation between Steph hate and LeBron stance.
Mm-hmm.
They are not, in my view, connected exactly.
Wait, so you don't think they're connected? Because I would also argue there is a high correlation the other way. People who dislike LeBron tend to really like Steph Curry too. So
for me, it's not a correlation in terms of, I think that they're both great. Why I say I don't think they're connected in my mind,
right,
from my opinion exactly, is because you could say that maybe partially it's connected in the fact that they're both playing at the same time, and what LeBron has been able to do and elevating very mediocre players to extreme heights makes us all expect that of every other great player. And so if you cannot do that, which really there's not very many people on the planet that can, if that's your standard, then everybody's kind of trash. But the expectation of Steph is that he should. And now we're going to get to see how high the Warriors can go with just him.
Yeah. So you were saying,
on your segment, you said you thought Steph was done, washed. It wasn't a comment on what he'd done in the past. You just kind of thought like the era of Steph being one of those upper echelon guys was over.
No, I didn't say that was my opinion. I think that that was the collective hate. That it doesn't matter what Steph has accomplished. He could, he's a two-time MVP, been to the finals five times, but because we've seen only five games of him last year,
right?
Then obviously the broken hand and then the pandemic, and then we haven't seen him for 9 months because he wasn't in the bubble, and then he starts off a little slow, and our brains are just dumb. And then we are on Twitter all day,
and
it's like, yeah, you know what? Maybe Steph has lost a step. Maybe he can't carry a team. Maybe he does need these all-stars to be his greatest. Maybe he needs to be unlocked by the likes of Clay and KD and Draymond as a cohesion. Maybe he's not the key to the lock. And it appears that that take was very, very wrong.
Yeah, I think that's even Warriors fans had that. Some Warriors fans had that day too, where there are just like a couple games of Steph not playing well. It's like, oh, whoa.
Everyone was a little tight waiting to, you know, wait for Steph to have one of, well, I guess the 62 point performance was kind of like the guys, he'll be okay performance, right?
And I'm a Portland Trailblazer fan. So that one really stung hard.
I guess it's been stinging hard for a long time.
Yeah, he does some dirty things to the Blazers. That's for sure. So you would think that I would atone, or I would shut my mouth, or even just shut my brain off to that. But no, I think it's really just when Steph looks bad, he looks really bad. He very careless with the rock, shoots the ball at any point in time just because he wants to from half court, basically. And when it's not going in, he's not gonna reevaluate shooting as much as possible. And so on bad nights, it just kind of compounds in your mind of like, wow.
Yeah, I like the Blazers one though, because that one's a Warriors. The Warriors and Blazers have a very interesting relationship. I mean, more specifically, it's Dame, and Oakland fans, and then Dame from here. And then also there was a lot of people that have been saying that Dame is a better point guard coming into the season than Steph Curry. So
he did have a better 2019-20 season. Pretty hard to dispute that one.
Can't say no to that. No. And I think also Damian Lillard is someone that, like, he plays in a similar style as Steph, I think, aesthetically, from an on the ball perspective. So I think that's where the fun similarities are. A lot of people enjoy it. I think it is a Twitter thing, though. You mentioned that people don't want to enjoy it because people just like being angry at things or like comparing things. So instead of enjoying LeBron James as a basketball player, Damian Lillard as a basketball player, and Steph Curry, then it becomes like, well, shoot, three games in.
We can only like one of them.
We are only allowed to like one of these guys.
We're putting them into tiers. We're all putting them into these different levels of what kind of player that they are. And I would say that arguably Anthony Davis is not a top five player unless he's playing with LeBron. And there's plenty of people that become elevated as a result of who they play with.
Sure.
Just because of the looks that they get, just because you know, people like LeBron are taking attention away from players like Anthony Davis who would normally get blitzed. So once they're alone and then you can blitz a player like Steph Curry, and he's not a great defender, he is obviously undersized, which we know that teams like the Raptors can go after him and quote unquote neutralize him. Then you're like, oh, well, have they figured him out? Is there a blueprint when there's no other guys on this very young, slightly mediocre roster that he's going to go to when you double him or box and one? And the truth is that was a dumb take. He can get off at any time and he can get off from anywhere. And it appears that he's got a chip on his shoulder like he did back in the Davidson days, which is, it's great for us. All the Steph slander, in my opinion, is probably the best thing that we could possibly have for basketball, because now he's taking it personally. And now he's leading the team in rebounds on some nights. He's doing things with the basketball from a passing standpoint that we haven't seen in a while. I think he's come with a vengeance. I think he's probably going to win the MVP this year if he keeps it up and the Warriors make the playoffs.
You were saying a lot of people kind of a lot of the slander comes from the fact when Steph is off, he's a little more off than the other superstars. Like, it looks more. And I'm just wondering, do you think most of it is related to aesthetics? Because I want to bring this back to like someone like Damian Lillard. Like, Dame kind of plays like Steph. Like, they're both shooting from 30 feet more times than anyone else in the league. Right,
he just doesn't move without the ball the same way that Steph.
Right, but I would also say, like, when Dame has nights where he just can't hit a three, and I feel like those nights he'll do the thing in the second half where he's like, well, I'm just going to barrel to the rim and get 15 free throws or something like that, and that's not traditionally something Steph does, but that's kind of like more in line with like how we traditionally view basketball. It's like some nights you just don't hit jumpers and you have to find another way to affect the game, whereas like when Steph's not hitting jumpers, he's doing weird stuff moving off ball and randomly Damian Lee's getting layups. So it's a little less direct. It's always been my theory that, like, just because his game is kind of like antithetical to like the way we're used to superstars playing, there's like a segment of people who are like, well, he's a great shooter, but I don't think he's all that people claim him out to be because it looks different.
Is he nice around the rim as much as, say, someone like
Kyrie,
Damian Lillard is, or Kyrie is? And the answer is, I don't know. Maybe. I think he can be, but that's just not his natural inclination to do that, because he doesn't have a ton of meat on his bones. I wouldn't want to go in the trees and get pounded either, especially if my confidence was already a little shaken up with me not hitting from wherever I want. I think when you just double down and you're like, I'm going to shoot from 35 feet now, I don't care that I'm ice cold. I think eventually that it will go in. There are games like that 2 of 16 night that you're just bound to see, and it's kind of hard to watch.
But then as a Steph fan, then if they win, we give him all the credit. So it all works out, even when he shoots. There was, I think, the worst shooting performance that he's ever had against Toronto, I believe. Yeah, and then they won the game. So what we do, Trista, is we go on Twitter, then we say everything that happened is attributed to Steph Curry. It's kind of like the same as LeBron stands, you know what I mean? It's like the same thing. It's no matter what happens, you blame everyone else. And then no matter what happens after that, if they win, you give it all to him. I actually think that's not a great thing in terms of the way that you view basketball. I think it actually has made basketball discourse a little bit more toxic, or a lot more toxic in the last 5 years, where people are just like, well, I love Steph Curry, or I love LeBron James. Then it's like, those guys can do no wrong. Or I love Kyrie Irving, right? Then it's like no nuance in that conversation ever. And you can't say anything bad about them. If you do, you're just going to get destroyed no matter what. You know, it's been a little bit annoying. I don't know if you've seen the same stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the thing that I think is the funniest part about Channing Frye and what he did on Twitter.
Right.
Is that, you know, and this is my opinion, I don't have any facts to go on this, but this is my opinion, that if you say something and you're sticking up for one of your friends, you have had that conversation with your friend, if you're going out publicly. And if that friend somewhat agrees, very much agrees, as long as he doesn't vehemently disagree, you sort of have his cosign. And I think, to a degree, LeBron agrees with Channing Frye's take that he has elevated, we'll call them scrubs, loosely, we'll call them scrubs, and believes that Steph Curry gets way more love than he deserves as it relates to MVPs, accolades, et cetera. And it's like, well, this dude's nice, but he's not as nice as me. And so I think that's why they're so connected, because – I mean, part of it is probably LeBron driving that narrative.
I also think LeBron fans are probably right to say Steph didn't single-handedly stop him, because no one single-handedly stops. It's like, it's a team game, right?
It's also LeBron's not playing by himself, though.
Right. The other point I want to make is, like, LeBron's the chosen one. He's had the hype since 15 or even before. He's lived up to the hype, you know, and more.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like when he went back to Cleveland, that was supposed to be his time to, you know, get 4, 5, 6, whatever it may be, like challenge Jordan. And then the Warriors, I mean, they won the title in 15 and they were still not favored by Vegas. They were like the fourth or fifth highest title odds after that, which is to say, like, no one saw that team coming. Like, obviously, we all remember, like, how much of a kind of a fever pitch it was when they won 73 games and kind of they're changing basketball and that whole thing. But it does kind of speak to kind of they were – that was supposed to be, like, LeBron's time to rack up the rings. And God, he might end up doing it with the Lakers anyway. But, like, it was one of the only things I can think of in basketball in my lifetime where, like, someone no one saw coming kind of led a team that ended up being, I don't know if you want to call it a dynasty or a mini dynasty or just some sort of run like that. Because I feel like everyone else in basketball history, it's like, it's Magic and Bird. And then, like, eventually it's Jordan. But everyone saw Jordan coming. And it's Shaq and Kobe. Everyone saw that coming. And then, like, you know, it was just a matter of time before it was LeBron's time. So I feel like that also kind of fuels the hate.
Yeah, I think when you feel like that's the thorn in your side and those LeBron stands will say that that first Warriors ring
doesn't count.
Doesn't count because yep. Kevin Love yep. wasn't playing and Kyrie wasn't playing. And so then when Kyrie and Kevin, they won, and then you had KD, and so then those rings don't count either.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's literally like two LeBron stands, none of the Warriors rings count. You know what I mean?
There's an asterisk every time.
And the thing is, like, I think you can make those arguments and people will be like, yeah, that makes sense. And then you can turn around and you can make the same arguments for the Warriors, right? And you could say these are the reasons why these rings are harder than everyone else's. And then here are the reasons why LeBron's rings don't count. Or that you've, like, there are so many things that, you know, Eastern Conference, how did you choke against the Mavs? There's so many things. There's just, you can argue all day. It's just, I think the part that is the most fascinating to me is that it is now said on a large national platform, like you just said about Channing Frye, where it's like, now we got Channing Frye. And I thought you made an incredible point, which I hadn't thought about. It's like, if he said this, he's talked about this with LeBron, and we understand, like, I agree with you. Like, that's probably what LeBron thinks. And that's the reason why some of this is being driven nationally. And it is a little bit weird because at the end of the day, if you were, I don't know, like, if you beat someone at something, don't you want to say that they're one of the greatest people to ever do it so that you can be known as, right? Like, it's just a little odd if you're going to talk shit about that person that you beat, because if they're really not so great, then how the hell did he beat you? Or how the hell was he part of beating you? You know what I mean?
Yeah, don't you want the opposite? It's like, that was one of the greatest teams led by one of the best players of all time, and I defeated them. You know?
Well, now, because you still have the guy, the 73-9 and they lied Twitter account.
Right.
That's like the ultimate LeBron stan account, right, where he'll post stuff up all the time about how LeBron beat the greatest team to ever live because, you know, they had never had, there was no regular season record like that before,
yep,
which means that everything that happened after the fact was just the Warriors trying to basically thwart LeBron's greatness. It's like, who's thwarting who at this point? It was just a great set of finals that we all got to live through. And now we're not going to obviously see that again. But yeah, back to the Channing Frye, you know that if he spoke to LeBron about it, because you know they've talked about it. And LeBron right. was like, no, dude, like, Steph Curry is that dude. Then Channing Frye would never say that ever again in life.
Oh, absolutely.
If LeBron was like, just shut the fuck up. Sorry, can we cuss on this? Yes. If he was like, dude, be quiet. That's an absurd comment. Channing Frye would never even think about writing that again. The fact that he would create an entire thread about it means there's been, in my mind, in my logic, there's been multiple conversations where there's even a more extreme viewpoint that we're not even hearing.
Oh, yeah. And so brings me to the last thing I want to talk about here is, has Steph replaced LeBron as the number one talk show lightning rod? Like, you know how, like, for like a 15 years, Skip Bayless made a career out of, like, it's like LeBron scores 30, but, you know, like, that sort of thing. And it's like, it was good business for him, clearly. But, like, and before that, it was Kobe. I remember in the 00s, particularly after Shaq left, it was like, you can't, you know, Kobe ran Shaq out of town. And Kobe was like Mr. Lightning Rod. Is Steph officially the biggest lightning rod in the NBA right now?
Let me add on to that too, Sam, because you know what that means? When someone is the lightning rod in all the talk shows, that they're going to get loved. Because when you see someone get bashed like that so often, then there's the backlash to the backlash to the backlash to the backlash. Then it becomes
the retirement tour where everyone pretends they never said what they said exactly. 5 years ago.
So, anyway, I was just going to add on there because I see that coming.
I think that's true. I mean, you could tell because I posted a cogent, like, condensed version of the segment on Twitter, and people were like, this girl doesn't know shit about basketball. Who is she?
Well, that's also just Twitter.
Get out of here. This is cringe. Like, how could you ever think that Steph, like, that I was just the only one in an echo chamber, even imagining in my mind that there was a possibility that Steph could not lead a team by himself? Because that's really the only argument that I have. It's not he's not great or that he's not the greatest shooter maybe that we've ever seen. Is he capable of taking scrubs and elevating them into the playoffs? Or is he the guy that breaks his hand and says, you know what? I'm going to chill the rest of the season.
I mean, I'd never heard the term floor raiser versus ceiling raiser before Steph. Like, just these, like, weird hypotheticals that people's like, well, you know, Russell Westbrook will raise the floor higher than Steph if you put him with three dudes in the YMCA and, you know, Nerlens Noel. Like that's some sort of magic.
That is.
There are all types of arguments out there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, I guess that's where we're living. This is Steph's chance to have his 2006 Kobe Bryant, you know, 2017 Russell Westbrook. We're not winning a title, but I know you are changing the game to my game because you want to see what I'm doing every night.
Well, and that's a problem. And actually, yes, and that's a problem that Steph has because he doesn't think like that. So, Trista, you made the point earlier where it's like, Steph is not that guy to say, I mean, I disagree in that he goes to the hole and he's one of the best finishers in the hole, but I agree. Wow. In the paint, in the hole, that's a pause. But he is one of the best, or he's uncomfortable being that guy to say, hey, Steve, fuck off. Eric Paschal, stand in the goddamn corner. You guys watch me, what I can do, right? He's not that guy. And some people are going to be like, well, that's super beta of Steph Curry, but that's just kind of who he is, right? Versus someone like Russell Westbrook, who has to scream and yell at all times and tell you how great he is. Steph is just like, well, I mean, he's a son of an NBA player. He's generally a very nice person, a very good person. And he's just not that guy that's going to yell at someone to do something like stand in the corner, which is like, so, I mean, something I told Sam was like, Steph's going to have to kind of get his LeBron on at some point this season and just say, James Wiseman, if you don't want to do this, you can get your ass on the bench, right? Stuff like that. And I don't think you'll ever see Steph do that, but I think that's what people wanted to see out of him in comparison to people like Russ.
I don't want to psychoanalyze, but that's kind of like, I would say, a part of the argument of our machismo culture of how we decide what true leadership looks like. And that leader that's the most vocal and the most aggressive and they go to the hole more aggressive. Like, Steph is a finesse guy. The things that he does, he can do them in a way that's smooth.
And he's never going to dunk over a 7-footer like Westbrook or Dame, for sure.
He's never like putting his nuts on like some defender's face. And then he's not going to like stare down at you. He's going to be like, what are we doing here? And I think that's part of the criticism as well that I had was he's a son of an NBA player. He's always had it somewhat easy. He's always been sort of in a nice cocoon of warmth. Yes, he's been underrated. Yes, he's had a chip on his shoulder in that way. But like the struggle for Steph and for Klay to a degree, and that's part of the Klay argument that sometimes people will say about them both is that when you are a child of an NBA player, it's just a different vibe. And so you don't have that additional gear when adversity comes. That's incorrect.
Yeah, I mean, it's all surface level analysis, but like that's also Steph. Like, yeah, you're right. He doesn't stare people down like an NFL player who made a big hit. It's like more of the shimmy and shrug. And it, in some ways that's more infuriating. It's like,
for sure,
this
for
dude
sure.
just dropped 60 on me and he's like smiling. Like he doesn't know what he's done. Like a little kid.
Yeah.
He's kind of an asshole.
Squat in the middle.
It's actually why players hate him. It's because of that. I mean, the stuff that you mentioned is all why, like, I mean, let's talk like LeBron, like he's probably like, well, like you grew up in the NBA, like you haven't been able to quote unquote deal with the same stuff. Like that's why guys hate him. And to me, it's like, I don't know what Steph's supposed to do about that. There's really not much you could do. I know Marcus Thompson wrote an entire book on this, and that's why he never felt like he was part of this kind of group or whatever, and that the NBA has kind of led by, you know, LeBron, because Steph is Steph Curry. He's not. And you can kind of look at it another way too, where it's like the guy went to Davidson, he wasn't recruited going in Davidson, and even coming out of college, he wasn't going to be a superstar, and it took him a few years to get there. Versus like you watch Luka Doncic, and it's like that's a superstar year two, like that was not the case for Steph. So it's a little different, it's a little weird, and guys probably resent him because of it.
Yeah, and I think as fans or people who are watching, when there are a large percentage of NBA players that don't like some player, you have to wonder, even though that's dumb and you broke that down pretty well about why, but we think to ourselves like, why? Like there must be something about Steph that we shouldn't like. If LeBron doesn't like Steph and I like LeBron and I'm on team LeBron, then I basically have to say fuck Steph, which is not true, but that's what people do. Like that's what followers legitimately do. And that's if you're not paying attention and you're lazy, that's where your mind sort of drifts off to when you see a bad night from Steph. Oh, yeah. This is why Steph's not that good.
Yep.
I think we'll end it there. I think we've gotten sufficient time. I think it's time for the jury to convene. Andy, are we going to exile her or are we going to forgive her for the previous Steph slander?
No, I'm not a LeBron stan. I love all. I love all. So what I'm doing is I'm bringing her into being a Steph fan because I love Dame. You know, I love Dame. I like LeBron. He's fine. I think the more people that enjoy basketball, I think is really what we need. And I think that was a great point that you made. It's like people just got to enjoy this whole thing, man. Like it's really not that serious. And sometimes you see Warriors fans, Steph fans, LeBron, all of them, where they just get personal on the timeline. So I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, we definitely have our own lunatic fringe or, you know, quasi-jihadis. So I don't need to encourage them. But before we get out of here, Trista, is there anything you want to plug?
I have an episode coming out this Friday of this league. Lots to cover. Obviously, the Kyrie saga continues. COVID saga continues. And we hit some voicemail. So please listen. Please subscribe, rate, review. I would really, really appreciate it.